This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the buildings and the collective sites that we've been visiting generally are not fit for human habitation and are extremely overcrowded, forcing many people to sleep outside on dirt.
That's Joel Millman of the International Organization for Migration discussing conditions for people forced from their homes by violence in southern Ethiopia. Details next.
Also, the outbreak of Ebola in the DRC is officially over, and Nigeria's ruling party suddenly became the minor party today when 15 senators defected.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story: the UN Migration Agency is launching an appeal for $22.2 million to provide life-saving assistance for hundreds of thousands of people displaced by communal violence in southern Ethiopia. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Fighting among local communities over pasture land and water resources along the border of Ethiopia's Gedeo and West Guji regions has displaced some 970,000 people since April. The spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Joel Millman, says this rapid displacement has resulted in the loss of livelihood, a disruption of services, and significant damage to infrastructure. He says the agency does not have enough money to deal with a crisis of this scale. He says the appeal will assist 400,000 displaced in the Gedeo and West Guji regions over the next 6 months. Millman tells VOA people are living under very precarious conditions, so more than half of the $22 million appeal will be used for emergency shelters and non-food items.
People are sleeping in the open. They have a single sheet of tarpaulin, often sleeping in dirt or mud underneath them. So shelters, of course, are the utmost importance. You know, it's the rainy season, and people left, usually carrying nothing but what they were wearing. So we know they're in need of everything.
Millman says people are clustering in different reception areas seeking help of every kind. He says IOM will provide assistance to the displaced in collective sites as well as to those living in host communities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials in Cameroon say reports that they arrested four soldiers depicted in a video executing women and children in the country's far north are unfounded, but a retired military officer was detained there, and his family believes his arrest is connected to the killings. As Moki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA, the family's story raises doubts about the official version of events.
36-year-old Pierre Fissou says security forces descended on their family home in Yagua in northern Cameroon on July 19.
Ils sont arrivés, ils étaient au nombre de 8 hein, avec le car.
He says 8 armed men dressed in military and police uniforms came to their home in a police bus. They detained 5 members of his family as neighbors watched helplessly. Some family members fled from the police, says Fissou. 4 of those detained were later released, but his brother was taken to Yaoundé. The family believes his brother, Fabasu Etienne, was somehow connected to the killing of 2 women and 2 children, allegedly by Cameroon soldiers. Before Etienne retired from the military, he was part of 50 soldiers deployed in 2014 to fight the Boko Haram insurgency in the northern town of Mayo Muskuta. Rights group Amnesty International says a video that circulated on social media this month appearing to show soldiers executing women and children was produced in the area. The video shows men in military uniform in a rural area blindfolding 2 women who have small children strapped to their backs and shooting them. One of the uniformed men says in French that it is a heavy burden executing people, but that they have no other option. Amnesty, in a report this month, said its experts had gathered credible evidence that it was indeed Cameroonian soldiers in the video. Government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says investigations so far have not indicated any government soldier involvement.
The weapons used are of AK-47 type, commonly called Kalashnikov, widespread in Africa and found in the hands of both regular armies and criminal gangs.
Chiruma says Cameroon President Paul Biya ordered an investigation of the killings shown on video, but maintains that no soldiers have been arrested in connection with the killings. He accused Amnesty of intending to destabilize the military.
With regard to the attires of the perpetrators of these abuses, they are not the ones used by the staff of the military accused by Amnesty International. In addition, the outfits observed in the video are often subject to open sale in the market.
The same video has resurfaced on social media with other voices saying that the killings were committed in Mali. The Malian government rejected the possibility and says the video has nothing to do with its military. Meanwhile, Fissou has traveled to the capital, Yaoundé, in search of his brother. He says Cameroonian authorities refused to acknowledge if Etienne is being detained. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo is officially over. The African country and the World Health Organization made the announcement today. They say quick action after the outbreak was detected in late April and the use of a vaccine prevented a full-fledged epidemic. Officials declared the DRC outbreak over after 42 days passed with no new cases, the equivalent of two incubation periods. The ninth outbreak of Ebola in the DRC killed 29 people, and there were concerns that it could have spread widely after it jumped from two remote villages to Mbandaka, a regional transport and trade hub. WHO says 24 people survived the virus, which causes severe hemorrhaging, and that 3,330 were inoculated with the vaccine. It was first used towards the end of West Africa's outbreak in 2014 that killed more than 11,000 people. Dr. Ibrahim Soki Fall, the Regional Emergencies Director for WHO, spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about how the outbreak was contained and the lessons learned.
Today is an important day for DRC and the international community since the Ebola outbreak was declared over.
So how did the lessons that were learned in the big West Africa epidemic help in dealing with this outbreak?
We realize that countries and partners expect WHO to play a more operational role. We went through a deep reform of WHO World Emergency. So we are faster and stronger in terms of operation. To give you an example, the same day the outbreak was confirmed, we were able to do a rapid risk assessment, assessing the risk both for DR Congo but also for neighboring countries. So this fund was set up after the West Africa Ebola outbreak. As you know, it was only after 4 months we were able to mobilize money to respond to the West Africa outbreak. We are also using new operation procedure and using the incident management system to respond to outbreak. So within a week, we were able to deploy over 50 people, and overall, we deployed more than 250 people.
And what lessons have you learned for the next outbreak?
We are not just leaving DR Congo and the Equatorial Province the way it was before the outbreak. Last week, we have organized a review of the response with many partners, and we are also going to have a national review. We better prepare in line with international health regulation.
So how were things on the ground? Because there were reports of a lot of paranoia about the vaccine, that you're actually giving people Ebola instead of keeping them from getting it.
We were able to vaccinate over 2,300 people. These are contact themselves, and also frontline health workers at risk. So overall, it went very well. The vaccine was well accepted. And more positively, we didn't get any Ebola case from the people who have been vaccinated.
What was the most difficult aspect of dealing with this outbreak?
The main challenge was really accessing the most remote areas, like Itipo and the villages around. Because to access this area, you have to be deployed by plane, by helicopter, and also to take motorbikes for investigation. It was also a big challenge to coordinate a number of partners.
There was the logistical issue of keeping the vaccine cold enough. Is there any way to help ease that issue?
Luckily, we were prepared enough to have, you know, everything we needed in terms of equipment. Of course, where we don't have, you know, electricity, it's very challenging, but we were prepared enough, knowing that in areas where Ebola happened, most of the time you don't have, you know, the electricity you need. So WHO, MSF, and all partners working on the vaccine were really prepared to operate in such a condition. So it's important, really, to continue investing on preparedness, because we know the risk and we know where they have gaps based on our independent evaluation. So we are really calling on partners, international community, to invest more on preparedness, strengthening the health system capacity for these countries to be able to prevent, also to be able to rapidly detect and respond to this type of outbreak.
That was Dr. Ibrahima Sokifold from WHO speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander.
The European Commission released two proposals this morning in Brussels to help reduce tensions within member states over how to deal with the flow of migrants arriving by sea to Europe. The proposals are in response to the EU summit last month. Italy and Greece demanded more help in dealing with the continuing influx of migrants into their countries, while they said other EU members were doing little or nothing to help. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field about the proposals and what the reaction has been so far.
What they are offering are two specific programs, if you like, to be able to control and to share responsibility for migrants who want to come to Europe, who get into trouble on the way, and those who actually make it to Europe. One of the proposals is inside Europe, EU member countries would be helped to set up so-called control centers. Now, these would be special operational centers where there would be screening and reception of migrants. They would be manned by European border guards, asylum experts, returning officers, security screening personnel, those sorts of people who would make the decision as to whether the migrants who are there are indeed in need of protection or they fall into the category of irregular or economic migrants and they need to be sent home. Now, the other proposal on this is that if any country within the EU takes in a migrant from these controlled centres, they will be given €6,000 per person that they take in. So that's the idea for migrants who actually arrive in Europe. The other proposal comes from what's been known as regional disembarkation platforms. And these are, if you like, small areas on the edge of North Africa along the Mediterranean where people who didn't make it onto boats or who got into trouble at sea and were brought in by various boats would have their applications processed. Now, the idea being that it would be safe for them there, it would improve the protection, and it would also, and this is what the EU is really hoping for, it would also break the business model of the smugglers who are putting all these migrants out to sea in rickety boats. The problem for the EU is where they want to put these regional disembarkation platforms are in northern Africa, and none of the countries along that Maghreb region have said they want these. So again, in this proposal that the EU has brought forward today. It has, if you like, sweetened it a bit and has said that any country that comes forward with this, wants to take part in this, then the EU would provide personnel to train the local officials. They'd also be able to train the coast guards of these countries. They would also be able to help enhance border management and also train registration officials as to how you go about registering migrants.
How are other members responding to the proposal?
Just in Brussels on Tuesday morning, they released this proposal. It will now go to EU ambassadors on Wednesday, and then on Monday of next week, if it gets the green light from the EU ambassadors, it will be taken to a meeting of the International Organization for Migration and UNHCR, which will be held in Geneva.
Also, it would have to get the buy-in from the North African countries. So how will they go about doing that?
Well, there is a big process by which the European Union has a program with these North African countries. They do have a very extensive program of aid and development with the European Union countries. But the criticism of this is that the European Commission has found all this money to protect itself, to protect its borders, when a lot of the NGOs and a lot of the smaller African countries, particularly in the sub-Saharan region, they are saying, please put some of that money into development in our own country. Please help our economy. So rather than putting up a bigger wall around Europe, you're actually helping us on the ground and helping to improve job possibilities, education possibilities at home, and that will again deter people from leaving their home country.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. There is an appeal for life-saving assistance for hundreds of thousands of people displaced by communal violence in southern Ethiopia. And the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo is officially over. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In 6 days, Zimbabwe holds elections for local councils, parliament, and the presidency. Violence has marred past elections. So far, the campaign has been calm, but there are concerns violence could return. The Zimbabwe Republic Police say it is prepared to keep the peace this time around. Reporter Kutsai Zvinavashi has details.
Godwin Matanga, the Commissioner General for the Zimbabwe Republic Police, says so far, stakeholders have contributed to a relatively peaceful campaign season.
May I also thank all civic organizations, religious organizations, government and non-governmental entities, including the Peace and Reconciliation Commission, the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, for taking a robust stand in spreading messages of peace, tolerance, and non-violence throughout the election period.
Matanga says the police have taken steps to support a safe electoral process.
All our officers have been retrained on various aspects and laws governing the holding of democratic elections as well as the preservation of law and order in the country. Let me highlight that all police officers are now ready for deployment and they are fully acquainted with the role or police during the forthcoming harmonized elections, as well as their duties and responsibilities.
He says the force has increased its visibility in the general public and hotspots prone to violence have been placed under continuous monitoring. Matanga says election violations reported thus far have been relatively minor. Reported cases have largely concerned defacing, destroying or covering up campaign posters. However, in June, a bomb exploded at a campaign event in what many saw as an attempt to assassinate President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is the candidate for the ruling ZANU-PF party. Matanga says investigations are still underway, but some suspects have already been arrested. Some members of the public, however, may be wary of any added police presence on election day. Zimbabwe's police, like its army, has long been seen as allied with the ZANU-PF and accused of repressing the opposition, often violently. Mnangagwa has repeatedly pledged this election, the first without Robert Mugabe as a candidate, would be peaceful and fair. The military ousted Mugabe after 37 years in power last November. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
The UN Human Rights Office is warning about rising tensions as presidential and parliamentary elections draw near in Zimbabwe. The agency is appealing to the government and all political parties to ensure that elections are peaceful. Lisa Schlein reports from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
July 30th will mark the first elections in Zimbabwe since former President Robert Mugabe was forced to resign last November after 37 years in power. State-sponsored violence that usually characterized elections during the Mugabe years has been notably absent during the current pre-election campaign. UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Liz Throssell says it is encouraging to see political rallies and peaceful demonstrations in capital Harare and the cautious optimism expressed by civil society.
We remain concerned, however, at the increasing number of reports, particularly in some rural areas, of voter intimidation, threats of violence, harassment and coercion, including people being forced to attend political rallies.
Zimbabwe's constitution reserves 60 seats for women in the 270-member parliament. Despite the legally enforced quota system, Throssell tells VOA female political candidates are being met with resistance and hostility and are subjected to disparaging language.
Now, the kind of disparaging language is really not going to come to any surprise to you. It's targeting them on the basis of them being women, calling them bra-burning feminists, calling them substandard candidates, attacking them personally.
The constitutional quota system, which is set to expire before the 2023 elections, is creating uncertainty about the future participation of women in politics. UN human rights officials say violence and other forms of intimidation must not be allowed to mar what could and should be a credible election process, free of fear for all Zimbabweans. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Andrade, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali broadcasts live from Harare, Zimbabwe, as voters prepare for the presidential election on July 30th. The Voice of America and the Zim Papers television network team up to present a presidential debate.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.